Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, yeah. Solartopia, Solartopia.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns and the Rivertown Kids on the Grammy award-winning album from the Rivertown Kids. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back with a Solartopia Green Power and Wellness show. We have today we're going to devote to the devil nukes, the reactors at Diablo Canyon that could shower the entire northern hemisphere with atomic radiation. We have some great local folks and some great experts with us, starting with Linda Seely. Linda, are you with us?
Hi, Harvey. I am here. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Good. All right. Very good. Very good. And I'm talking to you from Southern California. We're also going to be joined by Damon Moglen. Damon, are you on the phone? And Jim and Mary Beth in Bolinas. Are you guys with us? Okay, Linda, it's just you and me for the time being. And my Skype is a little troublesome, but we'll be fine. So, Linda, tell us where you are and what we're talking about here with the devil's nukes.
Okay. Well, right now, Harvey, I'm sitting 11 miles from Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant that has two nuclear reactors open, which first started producing electricity in 1984 and 1985, and currently have over about 2,200 metric tons of highly radioactive waste stored on site at the intersection of just about 13 earthquake faults, and two of those earthquake faults are considered to be major and active. And one of those major
active... How many earthquake faults did she say? At least 13.
At least 13. And they kind of... You know, have you ever looked down from an airplane when you're driving across, say, the desert, and you see those beautiful formations of where dry riverbeds are, and it spreads out in those fractal patterns? Well, that's how earthquake faults look too underground. If we could see them, and so there is this fractal pattern of earthquake faults, but unfortunately, they built a nuclear power plant right on top of them.
Unbelievable. Well, two reactors, of course. By way of disclosure, I was arrested at the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant in 1984. It's exactly 30 years ago. And
exactly.
you were arrested there also, right?
I was arrested there actually three times in 1984. I couldn't get enough of it.
Well, they just went, and were you in the county jail the whole time?
No. I was in the county jail only once, and the two other times they were so sick of people getting arrested that they just took us to the county jail and turned us out like goats.
Goats?
So I never did, I never did get, I only had to go into the slammer once.
And how long
were
you in?
But that was okay, it was fun. I was in overnight. One night, which was plenty enough for me, but it was, I can say it was a wonderful experience to commit civil disobedience in order to make a statement about a policy and that is outright lethal to our world. And so it's a great pleasure to join with people like you in acts of civil disobedience when they are deemed necessary for the safety of ourselves and for the future generations.
And well, yeah, I was in three nights in the county jail. Uh-huh. We had a really good time. Of course, it was overloaded, and but we did it. Do I hear someone else on the line? Someone else with us, or is it just you and me, Linda?
I don't know.
Still you and me. Okay.
Okay.
So tell us now, how long have you lived in San Luis Obispo?
I moved here in 1982, thinking that that Diablo Canyon would never open, because I had read, I'd been keeping track of it. My former husband and I moved here because he got a job here, and we had three children. And my greatest concern about moving here was the nuclear power plant before we moved here from the Midwest. But I started reading about it, and it was at the time that they discovered that the plans for the big struts on the control room of Unit 2 were built backwards. And after I read that, and it was postponed, they postponed the opening, I thought, there is no way on this earth that they are ever going to open something like that, right? Built backwards? How could they? On an earthquake fault? We knew about one at that time. No way. We have the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They'll make sure it doesn't open. So then we moved out here, and lo and behold, they opened it. And that actually, I had already joined the Mothers for Peace prior when I first moved here, and so when we got the word that they were going to open it, they started the effort that you and I were involved in, the People's Emergency Response Plan that started in January of 84 and went through July, I think. Yeah, it was a long. And more people were arrested. What? I'm sorry.
Tell us about why Diablo Canyon is such a problem. Give us a hint.
Well, like I told you, it's built on these earthquake faults. Stop me when you need to, because when I get going, I could go on for a long time. But it has also a process called once through cooling, where they take in 2.5 billion gallons of seawater every day, and in that they suck up all of the sea larvae and the very small, the plankton, all sorts of things, and kill it as it goes through Diablo. And so Diablo contributes to 80% of the death of sea life along the whole California coast. And they are required by law to change that once through cooling system into cooling towers, which they do not want to do because they don't want to spend the money for it. So Mothers for Peace, along with the World Business Academy in Santa Barbara, are running an effort to force the State Water Board to make Diablo build cooling towers. We're going after this in sort of a many-pronged attempt. I belong to the Mothers for Peace, and we have been the legal intervener against Diablo Canyon since 1973. And we've won several cases in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. We have ongoing litigation right now. We are continuously litigating. PG&E has applied because the licenses for these two reactors are going to expire in 2024 and 2025. And so PG&E has filed, of course, to extend those licenses for 20 more years. And
now, these are two huge atomic reactors.
Huge. Huge.
They are sitting surrounded by how many earthquake faults?
13, at least.
13. Have 13 earthquake faults been dominated, been documented within how many miles of Diablo Canyon?
Well, the farthest one away is 4 miles. That's the hot fault.
13 earthquake faults documented within how many miles?
4.
4 miles?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like a major crossroads of earthquake faults.
It's a major crossroads of earthquake faults, yeah. And you know, the San Andreas fault is only 45 miles away. And there, I mean, the whole earthquake analysis business has been very much supported by investigations into Diablo Canyon. The PG&E just had to make an analysis of this fault called the Shoreline Fault that runs 300 yards from the intake structure of Unit 1. It has been determined to be a major earthquake fault, okay? 300 yards from Unit 1. And it also it connects with other earthquake faults. So all of these earthquake faults, and then there is speculation, they don't know for sure yet, that it also connects up with what's called the Hosgri Fault, which is the major, the even bigger earthquake fault that's about 3.5 miles away. And so there, Michael Peck, who was our resident, chief resident inspector at Diablo Canyon, who worked for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Actually, he still works for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but after he wrote what I'm going to tell you, he was transferred promptly to Chattanooga, Tennessee. But that didn't have anything to do with what he said. Basically, what he said was that reading PG&E's analysis of the Shoreline Fault, which was just discovered, first discovered in 2008, and then they started doing analysis on it, you know, after they discovered it, that the reading what PG&E said about their analysis of ground movement is how much the ground moves if an earthquake goes off. What they said in their own report was if there were a 6.6, if I'm not, or 7, I can't remember which, earthquake on the Shoreline Fault, that this, because of the type of earthquake it is, and because of the proximity to the plant, that it could cause the critical backup, it wouldn't cause the dome to fall down, it wouldn't cause the walls to collapse. What it would cause is the backup safety systems to collapse, that they are not adequate for that kind of an earthquake. Well, you might as well have the dome collapse, you know, if the critical backup safety systems don't work. And if, God forbid, we should have a large earthquake similar to the one in Fukushima or, you know, even a, I don't even know, if we were to have a large earthquake and we lost, you know, Harvey, nuclear power plants, everybody thinks, oh, well, they produce their energy, and so that's cool, and they give it out to the grid. They have to have energy coming into them 24/7 without fail in order to run their backup safety systems. They don't produce energy that goes to themselves. They produce energy that goes out into the grid. So they have to have energy coming in to run their lights, to do their air conditioning, and to run their pumps and the pumps pump the water that cool both the spent fuel pools, where this very hot spent fuel is kept, And the steam generators, the cooling system for the steam generators that run the nuclear reactors. So it's super important to keep that power on coming into the plant. And at Fukushima, what happened is they lost their off-site power. And if that happened at Diablo Canyon due to an earthquake that messed up the backup safety systems, we could be in the same kind of pickle that those poor people, animals, plants, air, water are in at Fukushima right now.
Well, Linda Seeley, you're talking with us from San Luis Obispo, California, home of the two massive nuclear reactors, the devil's nukes, as we call them, and we're going to continue to call them, all over the country. These two reactors are on the Pacific Coast, in the middle of the coast of California, and they are about halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. And my understanding, Linda Seeley, is that if, God forbid, an earthquake should turn these reactors to rubble, will you tell us what would happen?
Well, the prevailing winds come from the north. And it's pretty, you know, we've got this coastal climate here. And pretty much probably 85% of every single day, the winds are coming from the northwest, actually. And they blow right past Diablo, straight down the coastline through Santa Barbara and into the Los Angeles basin. It also, we live in the strawberry capital of California, or of the United States, I would say, and we have a huge wine industry here. We grow a tremendous amount of broccoli here, all kinds of vegetables. We're the capital of sugar snap peas here. We have a big organic movement here. We have a lot of organic food available. Lots of people running small organic farms and dairies and all that kind of thing. And if, God forbid, it did happen, this place would be rendered a wasteland. It would be like Chernobyl is today. It would be like Fukushima, where people, I mean, Fukushima is so similar to here, Harvey. It's like we have one of the
what
most
are the similarities?
The similarities are the agrarian economy, number one. Number two, the desirable landscape, the beauty, the natural beauty that is unspoiled. It's a tourist destination. People come here to relax and rejuvenate and connect with nature and all of that. And I read an article today, actually, about the people of Fukushima who can never go home, all the farmers and
yes, there's many thousands.
Many, yeah, who can never, ever, ever go home. And it, you know, it's so ridiculous to have an atomic reaction to boil water to make electricity when we have the possibility of solartopia.
And a green-powered Earth.
A green-powered Earth. What is the sense of this death ship technology?
Sense of it, of course, is corporate profit. I'm Linda Seeley from San Luis Obispo, and we know that the corporations make big money on nuclear power, and that's why they like it.
Yeah. But that's, to me, that is not a good enough reason. It's a dumb reason, because their kids are going to suffer, just like our kids and our grandkids are going to suffer if this happens, Harvey. And so we've got, you know, I have basically, actually, I was a midwife for 32 years, and then I retired in 2009 and decided I was going to throw myself completely into, because I always have worked for the future generations, and so I decided the best way that I could do it is by working on this nuclear issue because I live here. And so since 2009, that's all I've done, and it's gotten just bigger and bigger and more, and the problems get more complex, and the system gets more corrupt. And, you know, it's like we, the people, are the only, and the good part is that we are many, you know, we are numerous, and we're strong in each other's, in each other's kinship. And so we can do it. You know, I know we can. We can. I was thinking about this today about like how to personify nuclear power. And I was thinking about the dragon, you know. It's not where, you know, one guy on a white horse comes in and slays the dragon. It's like where a whole bunch of people run in and grab the dragon by all of its different appendages and just take it out like that, because it's going to take, as Hillary Clinton said, it takes a village, and in this case, it takes a movement to stop these things. And there are 99 nuclear power plants running right now in this country, and across the world there's over 400, about 430, I think, and every single one of them is a nuclear waste dump, every one. And then we can start talking about the nuclear waste from armaments that is just enormous. So it's something. The nuclear reaction only took place for the first time, wasn't it, in like 1944, right, at the University of Chicago? So I was born in 1944. And so this whole change in our world, before 1944, there was no radiation in the water, in the air, in any crops. Now it is endemic. There's cesium-137 in all the water from the atmospheric testing, and now from Fukushima. There's strontium-90 worldwide. We are being, and why do you suppose that we have such an incredible increase in the amount of cancer that, you know, one out of three women gets cancer in her lifetime? One out of seven women gets breast cancer. I mean, that's crazy. And every man will get prostate cancer if he lives long enough. That's crazy. And it's much of it is due to the radiation. And, you know, God knows what else. I guess the...
Well, let's put this in perspective now. More than 10,000 people were arrested at Diablo Canyon in the 1980s. Is that correct, Linda?
I think it was even more, Harvey.
Yeah. So more than 10,000 were arrested.
Yeah.
I believe more people were arrested at Diablo Canyon than any other nuclear reactors.
And
these reactors sit on the west coast of the United States, and a major disaster at Diablo Canyon would send radiation across the entire continent of North America.
That's the other part. Right. Because the winds come from the northwest. They also travel in, you know, that through, and it rises up on the jet stream and sprinkles down radiation everywhere. I mean,
right, and we know that to be the case because we did have that happen from Chernobyl. The radiation from Chernobyl came to the United States within 10 days, and across the United States within 4 more days, and the entire United States was irradiated with radiation coming all the way from the Soviet Union. But in California's case, the radiation would get to the East Coast in about 4 days. You would wipe out the entire Central Valley of California. You would send a cloud of radiation down the coast, the West Coast, across Santa Barbara and into Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And, of course, San Luis Obispo, which is about 9 miles away, from the nuke would be totally irradiated and uninhabitable forever. Is that correct?
Yep, that is correct. Mm-hmm. And we have two colleges here. We have Cal Poly University with 23,000 fresh, young, bright, innocent students. And we have Cuesta College, which is a junior college with 10,000 of the same. So there we have a sacrifice of 33,000 young people if anything should happen. Because there's no exit out of here, Harvey.
And, of course, there is a tremendous damage that would be done to the ocean. Diablo Canyon is right on the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
In the cove at Apple Beach. And the radiation from Diablo Canyon would, of course, add to the radiation from Fukushima that's already in the Pacific and just about arriving there now, I understand.
Yeah, so, that's what we're hearing.
So what we're talking about essentially is an apocalyptic event.
Apocalyptic is right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what we're going to do now, we're at 2:26. We're going to take a short break, folks in the studio in New York. And we'll come back. You can run your spots, and we'll come back in a few minutes, Linda Seely, and we're going to talk about what is being done to shut the devil's nukes and the steps people are taking now. So let's cut to the Dana Lyons song, and we'll be back. Run your spots, and we'll be back in a bit.
Coal plants, nuke plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solar Topia is home sweet home to me.
That's Dana Lyons with the Solartopia Rocky Top song. We are back at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're talking about the Devil's Nukes, the two huge reactors at Diablo Canyon, California, where people are working to shut them down as fast as humanly possible. We've been talking with Linda Seely, who lives in San Luis Obispo and who has been informing us of the detail. Linda, when you're back on the line, just chime right in, please.
Yeah. I'm back.
There you are. So
you
told me something I did not know. I didn't know that there were 35,000 people living in the San Luis Obispo. 35,000 students in the San Luis Obispo. That's a pretty impressive number. You've got Cal Poly there, and I guess a number of other schools. So let's talk about now about these strategies for shutting this reactor. Now, let's set the stage here. We have 99 reactors in the United States. Right now, there's a sort of a trade-off going on. The Vermont Yankee plant, thankfully, after decades of tremendously powerful and important activism, is in the process of shutting down as we speak. But another reactor at Watts Bar, Tennessee, which was being built for three decades, actually, is in the process of firing up. So we're going to be stabilized at about 100 reactors in this country right now. And but the prime suspect, some people say the most dangerous, and that's a pretty impressive credential, but a lot of people say the most dangerous of the reactors is the Diablo Canyon plant, the two reactors at Diablo Canyon. So the strategies now, Linda Seely, how are we going to shut these plants?
Well, you know, we have to work at it from many different angles. We've got the Mothers for Peace, my group, we do legal intervention with the NRC. And we've got, also with the new guidelines from the EPA, using, you know, the new EPA carbon rule has been co-opted by the nuclear industry. And so in the new EPA carbon rule, to reduce the amount of carbon in the atmosphere, they are figuring in the amount of power produced by nuclear power plants as green energy. And we are trying to get that taken out of the EPA carbon rule, because that is insane to call it green energy. We also have been fighting against this waste rule that the NRC is so clever. Okay, so even back in 1973, when they first started digging the holes to build Diablo Canyon, the Mothers for Peace said, hey, wait a minute, you're going to have nuclear waste there. What are you going to do with it? And the NRC said, oh, don't worry about it. By the time we need it, we'll have a permanent repository for it. You just, you know, don't worry your pretty little heads. And so we've kept yelling the same thing for the past, 30 years now, since it opened. And so have all the other nuclear plants around the country, all the other activists. And they promised us that there would be a place for us to put this horribly toxic waste. Well, there isn't any place for it. So what do you do if you can't keep a promise? Well, you change the rules. So what they said now is, oh, we don't need a permanent repository for the waste. You can just keep it right there on site for the next 600 years or so. And we'll just keep letting them make more and more and more of it. It's like building a hotel without installing any bathrooms, you know, or a septic system. There is nowhere to put this, you know what. And so so we're challenging, along with 35 other environmental groups, this new rule that the NRC made, that since they realized they couldn't make a repository for it, well, they'll just change the rule and say they don't need a repository. So anyway, that's one of our fights. And then the EPA rule. And then we have allies. We have Friends of the Earth, ta-da, who have come in to the fight against Diablo, and they have petitioned the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to be a legal intervener, just like the Mothers for Peace, to be able to get up in court and talk about these issues that they've raised. And their issues are about the original seismic design of the plant. And it goes very much along with Dr. Michael Peck's differing professional opinion that he issued about the critical backup safety systems. So they have filed for that. So we've got Friends of the Earth working on it. And then we have a local group here called the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, who are just fantastic. And they work on state issues with the Public Utilities Commission and the California Energy Commission to try to get this thing pulled out from the ratepayer base so that people don't have to pay for this ridiculous form of energy for the next umpteen thousand years. And so they're busy in Sacramento and San Francisco working on that. And then the part that we've been missing is the component of the people's activism. And that's why we're so delighted, Harvey, that you've decided to take this great interest in Diablo Canyon, because we need a people's movement around this.
So now let's talk about a couple of other things here. There is a law on the books in California about water quality.
That's
and,
right.
And tell us about what the Diablo Canyon plant needs to meet, which it doesn't.
Oh, well, it has to meet the water quality rules, which it means it has to stop the once-through cooling that I talked about before and build cooling towers, and that's quite expensive. So we've been working on a campaign with our allies down in Santa Barbara called the World Business Academy, and they have this thing called the Safe Energy Project to shut down Diablo. And they've been distributing and asking our supporters and their supporters to write letters to the State Water Board for it, and imploring the State Water Board to force Diablo Canyon to comply with its with the state law and build the cooling towers that they need. And it would be at a great expense. It would be at least probably between $2 and $3 billion to build the cooling towers or shut it down. But we and shut it down because it's also, frankly, it's, you know, obviously a tactic to add more expense to PG&E's pocketbook, and perhaps we're hoping that PG&E will say, well, it's just not worth it to us to keep this thing running if we have to put all this money into it, so we'll just shut it down and put, you know, have people
well,
put
soap you're hoping on their shops.
Absolutely. That's the purpose. That's the intention of this thing, you know. And but it's not the full purpose. The full purpose is that we want to have we want our sea life to be able to regenerate, which it can't now. If you talk to the fishermen here, there's no fish out there. This used to be like a, you know, like a Walt Disney movie here with the jumping porpoises and the, you know, the herons and the seagulls and everything. But it's no longer like that. It's devoid pretty much of fish. And the like, I went to Morro Bay the other day, and I felt like having some fish, and I went to three different restaurants and asked if they had any local fish, and nobody did. Right on the ocean, right on the, it was absolutely.
Well, how much of this do you think is Diablo's fault?
I don't know. Well, it counts for 80% of the sea life loss on the California coast. How about that? So probably a good deal of it, because it takes all the sea life in its larval stages, so it interrupts the sequence, prevents reproduction, you know. So it's pretty serious. And we got rid of San Onofre, and their fishing has picked up down there since they got rid of it.
Now, tell me about that. Let's talk about that for a minute. There was a huge victory, which we've talked about on our show, on the Soiltopia
mm-hmm.
show.
Mm-hmm.
At San Onofre, which is in between,
right.
near San Clemente, in between
right.
Los Angeles and San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And this plant went down a while ago because they screwed up their cooling system.
But
then the
citizens' right.
movement, yes, the steam generators,
uh-huh.
and the movement against nuclear power successfully forced those reactors to be retired.
That's right.
And now they are done. Now,
they are done.
They're done. They will not operate again.
Ever.
So tell us what, if any, noticeable impacts on the environment you have seen at San Onofre.
Well, this is only word of mouth because I haven't not, well, I was down there last year, but I haven't been down there for a year. But from my allies down there, they're telling me that their sea life is improving tremendously. That's the big noticeable thing, that they're catch, you know, their fishermen are out there catching fish, and they're, you know, that whole industry of the you know, sustainable fisheries it's regenerating. It would happen here too. Our water here is clean here except for Diablo. And we have, you know, we have a great upwell here we have down at Point Bouchon, which is right sort of the dividing line between what we call it between Northern and Southern California. It's about 40 miles south of us. It's where the two currents meet, and there's this huge upwelling of life out there. And it you know, it's if we could get rid of this monstrosity that takes 2.5 billion gallons a day of water and neutralizes it of all life. We, the Earth and our coastline would be so much better off. I mean, it's hard for me to even imagine how much better off it would be, you know?
Now, also, you, one of the groups in San Luis Obispo that you work with, Linda Seeley, we're talking with Linda Seeley. You're with Mothers for Peace, is that correct, Linda?
Yes, that's correct.
And you are actually older than I am, and you have actually uh-huh. been in the anti-nuclear movement, uh-huh. or at least got arrested at Diablo before I did, back in uh-huh. the 1980s.
Yeah.
And you live not far from these two incredibly huge and lethal reactors.
Yeah.
And one of the groups in the San Luis Obispo area commissioned a health study to find out what the impacts have been on the human population of the operation of the Diablo Canyon nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the findings of that study.
Well, it was commissioned by the World Business Academy in Santa Barbara, and they commissioned Joe Mangano, who is a health scientist, to write the study. He's written many other health studies in the past, and he found that he did it by zip codes and found in certain zip codes very high, extremely high incidence. He compared it to from before Diablo opened to the years after Diablo opened, and found a huge spike in breast cancer, thyroid cancer, childhood leukemia, and melanoma. We have more melanoma here than any other county in the state. Don't know why. We went from a low rate of a low cancer rate, that's what they call it, to a high cancer rate.
Upon the opening of the reactors.
Yeah, after the opening of the reactors.
The rise in cancers and in the community is linked directly to the opening of the reactors at Diablo Canyon. Is that correct?
That's how I read it. People dispute the results of that study, especially PG&E. So what we've challenged, I am also on the executive committee of our local Sierra Club, and I'm also on the core team of the National Sierra Club Nuclear Free Campaign. And so what our local Sierra Club did after the study came out, after it was repudiated by PG&E, and by the way, this is a company town. PG&E is the greatest contributor to all the nonprofits in this town, and they're like a benevolent dictator. They have a lot of money, and so they buy the favor of the people and the government officials and all that. So that's just an aside. But anyway, so PG&E, you know, strongly repudiated that study. And so what our local Sierra Club did was to go to our local health department and challenge them and say, look, if you don't like the results of this study, do your own. Hire the health statistician that you choose. But we want to know, because we want people to be able to get early intervention if they do have cancer, for one thing. And so then what has subsequently happened, and the health department stonewalled that. They wouldn't even respond to that request. So we have a wonderful free clinic in this town. It's called the Noor Clinic, and they are starting to offer free screening for these different types of cancer, breast, thyroid, and melanoma. They cannot do childhood leukemia yet because the screening process is too expensive for them to start. But they still are going to be offering the three, and that'll be starting up here within the next, I don't know, a couple of months or so, as soon as they get their funding, which is coming up here, too. So that's really good. And, you know, it's kind of heart-wrenching when you think, like, I raised three kids here. And there's always this feeling in the back of your heart, you know, Harvey, when you're raising your kids and you look at them and they don't feel good and you're thinking, you know, have I made a big mistake by allowing my kids to be raised here? You know, was this the worst thing I could have ever done for them, to move them to this beautiful place with a nuclear power station, you know?
Boy, that's a terrible. That's a pretty terrible prospect.
It really is.
I mean, that's heart-wrenching.
It really is. And it's, you know, it is for a lot of people moved away from here when Diablo opened. A lot of people. But a lot of people stayed, and many people have moved in. And I would say probably 75% of the people who move into this area do not know that Diablo Canyon is there.
Wow. How do they keep it a secret?
There are no signs.
How do you keep something like that a secret?
Well, if you drive down past the power plant, it says Diablo Canyon Power Plant. There's no word nuclear there. There are no signs. You go in. I went into the, Chamber of Commerce, I don't know, about 2 months ago, just to check up on them, because they are, you know, I'm a busybody, and I do kind of stick my nose into other people's business, but they had promised me at the Chamber of Commerce that they had information about Diablo Canyon for visitors. This is a huge, huge tourist area. And so I went in and I said, I'd like to have some information about Diablo Canyon, please. And they were like, about what? And I said, Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, you have some brochures? No, the kids that were working at the Chamber of Commerce didn't know what Diablo Canyon was. I was a guest lecturer last Friday morning at a class at Cal Poly, our local university, and I talked about Diablo Canyon and Mothers for Peace, and the first thing I did was ask them to raise their hands if they had heard of Diablo Canyon. It was there were about 40 students in the class, and four of them raised their hands. And this is an upper division class. These were all juniors and seniors. And
that's mind-boggling.
And Cal Poly says that they talk to their students about Diablo Canyon during they have this thing called the Week of Welcome, WOW Week, where new students come in, and they say they devote an hour to Diablo Canyon. Not one of those students remembers this WOW Week experience that they have. So, and then if you move here and you buy a house here, you do have to sign a disclaimer in your packet of signing documents that you go through when you buy a house. But I bought a house 3 years ago, and I had a pack of signing documents that was about an inch and a half thick. And the realtor said, sign these documents where I have the little tabs. And just he would move the pages for me while I signed, right? Nobody said a peep about a nuclear power plant. And I said to him, where's the one about Diablo? And he said, oh, it's in here somewhere. So,
well, of course, the law, you cannot get any kind of insurance for nuclear disaster on any house in the United States.
That's right.
And so I'm sure they're not going to tell you about that. We're talking with Linda Seeley from the Mothers for Peace. Linda, you've just been fascinating about living near one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous, nuclear power plants in the United States. We are going to open up a big national focus to shut these two reactors down as soon as possible. Pacific Gas and Electric, the owner of Diablo Canyon, the two reactors there, recently perpetrated, shall we say, a major explosion in the town of San Bruno, killed eight people, wiped out an entire neighborhood because they did not maintain their gas, and they were fined $1.4 billion by the California Public Utilities Commission.
That's right.
What do you put the chances on our ability to shut Diablo Canyon. How effective do you think we can be in getting these two reactors shut?
I think we'll get them shut within 18 months.
Wow, that's optimistic. What's going to do it? What's going to force these reactors to go down?
I don't know, Harvey. It's going to be a confluence of events. We've already got a bunch of stuff. Like you said, PG&E just got fined $1.4 billion for killing 8 people, blowing up 38 houses, and injuring 167 people in San Bruno because they did not maintain their pipes up there. They just got busted for collusion with the Public Utilities Commission staff. And the PUC, the head of the PUC, just resigned, Michael Peavy. He is resigned in shame over the fact that his staff was colluding. His chief of staff is gone. He's on his way out. And it's collusion with PG&E. It's signing emails to each other with "love ya" like that. Can you imagine? They also have just been busted for colluding with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission over the unbelievable coincidence of the release of PG&E's seismic report, very important report that was just released about two and a half weeks ago. In almost perfect synchrony, within 10 minutes of the release of the Shoreline report, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission released its results of the investigation of Dr. Michael Peck's allegations that the original seismic design was not adequate, for that plant needs to be shut down right now. And those two were, it was like they were dancing together, releasing those two reports. And so Friends of the Earth, I can't remember if it's Friends of the Earth or Mothers for Peace right now, has requested all of the correspondence through a Freedom of Information Act, all of the correspondence that went on about those two reports. So we have a corrupt company dancing with corrupt agencies. We have people who are mad as hell, who don't want to live around, you know, a nuclear waste dump, who are going to be forced to, unfortunately, live around a nuclear waste dump for the rest of their lives. However, the minute that thing, those two reactors quit producing nuclear waste, you know, the better. We need to stop it 10 years ago from, or 30 years ago from producing nuclear waste. But, you know, to allow it to go on is a crime against nature. It's a crime against the future generations and against the biosphere, and it cannot go on. And so there's going to be, I believe that the Earth is intelligent and wise and wants nuclear power to go. And this is a huge mistake that the human being has created by making and using the nuclear fission without
well, and Linda Seeley, you are among those who are helping to correct it. I believe we're down to our last minute or two here.
Okay.
Do you have a website that we can send people to?
We have a few. How about mothersforpeace.org?
Okay.
FOE, Friends of the Earth, FOE.org. And then we've got our wonderful allies in Santa Barbara, worldbusiness.org.
Good.
So those three websites are awesome. If you read those, you'll know all about it.
And you'll be having a statewide meeting in January of people focused on shutting down the Diablo Canyon nuclear reactors.
And
these
we're having
the devil's nukes.
We're
going to call this the devil's nukes. Shut the devil's nukes. It's going to be a global campaign, And Linda Seeley, you are a true trooper here, and we are really committed on this show to shutting these reactors. And we're also about to go out. So thank you so much, Linda Seeley. We'll be back
with more about
the Devil's Nukes. And we'll be talking to you again, ladies and gentlemen, on Nuclear Free World. This has been the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you to the crew in New York. And we will see you again next week.
We needed more. The rich got rich. The poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce. The price jumped.